This week, the precious metals continued their impressive rebound while the major equities indexes closed at the highest point in American history. Hello, everyone, and happy 4th of July holiday weekend to our American listeners. Well, your host, Chris Walczak, back with you this weekend with another big show, which starts off with the market weather report, an overview of this week's top stories that impacted the markets, with a glimpse at next week's forecasts. And the segment is followed by a new Q&A forum where we open up the phone lines for listeners to share their insights and concerns. Then a must-hear encore interview with Rich Dad Robert Kiyosaki. The show wraps up with a brand new installment from GoldSeek.com Radio's Robert Ian. The show begins now with a market weather report. Visibility was virtually unlimited over the precious metals exchanges this week. On further gold positive news from the head of the U.S. Fed, Dr. Yellen, who reiterated comments that the key Fed lending rate would remain near zero for the foreseeable future. Plus, silver received a boost from the trend of increased industrial demand for strategic manufacturing components like platinum and AG. At Friday's closing bell on the New York COMEX exchange, investors turned to gold, which added nearly $4, finishing at $1,320. The yellow metal was still higher for the year by about 10%. Silver gained about 5 cents, finishing at just shy of $21. Platinum picked up 17, closing at $8.59, and palladium picked up $17, closing near $8.59 an ounce. It climbed for the 8th straight session, the longest rally since September 2012. Russia is the top producer, followed by South Africa. Platinum also finished higher, ending at $15.01. That was a $21 gain for the week, reaching as high as $15.23 an ounce. That was the highest since last year amid signs on increasing demand stemming from catalytic converter production. The automotive industry is on track for its best year since 2007. Plus, platinum ETFs climbed to a new record, and there's apparently a supply deficit. A 5-month strike, though, by miners, which crippled output in South Africa, the world's top producer, apparently came to an end about 10 days ago. West Texas Intermediate crude finished just above $104 a barrel. That's a loss of about $1.50 for the week. Well, the top story affecting the precious metals markets this week, Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen underscored recent comments that the benchmark U.S. overnight lending rate will be held low for the foreseeable future. The comments were viewed as inflationary and, of course, pro-gold. At the International Monetary Fund in Washington, Dr. Yellen noted that there is no need to alter the Fed policy. The central bank has held the key lending rate at zero for over 5.5 years and tapered MBS purchases for a 5th consecutive time, down now to just $35 billion at the most recent June meeting. Rising home and equities prices and an improving global economy should help stoke the above-trend growth in the U.S., that according to the Fed chair. So it's no surprise that investors poured capital into the largest ETF fund with gold backing. Gold and silver remain the go-to asset class of the year so far, along with stocks, and the yellow metal is still higher, thanks in no small part to the political turmoil in Ukraine and escalating conditions in Iraq. Bottom line on the precious metals. Well, the technical situation is shaping up well with both the XAU and silver poised for further gains. For next week's forecasts and individual stock candidates, please log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, nothing was seen from horizon to horizon but sunny skies over the New York Stock Exchange, with all three major indices at new bull market highs and the Dow and S&P at all-time record weekly closes. The Nasdaq is also getting within earshot of levels not seen in about 14 years, around the time of the year 2000 zenith. For the week, the Dow was up 216 points, ending at 17,068. The S&P added 24, wrapping up at 1985, while the Nasdaq gained 87, finishing at 4485. So just what's happening in these markets? Well, clearly investment flows from the EU and globally are chasing the U.S. stock market, with global investors frankly afraid to miss the boat. In addition, the incredible IPO market is showing strength that encourages institutional investors to run with the herd, so they're investing with the trend. Furthermore, better than expected data from the Labor Department showed that employers added 288,000 workers to the non-farm payrolls last month, sending the national unemployment rate lower to 6.1%, a level far exceeding Fed expectations. The ADP Research Institute employment number revealed the best figure in nearly 2 years, and the Labor Department is scheduled to report monthly job statistics. The European Central Bank also held interest rates unchanged this week, adding some details, though, regarding a proposed lending program, which essentially means further monetary stimulus, good news for stocks and gold. Bottom line, on Wall Street, well, the seven-component sentiment index that we watch so closely remains in extremely enthusiastic mode. Just, I think, a bearish sign. But, you know, markets can remain irrational much longer than individual investors can remain bearish. For the time being, no sense to fight the trend. And as I noted in the Alpha Stocks newsletter last week, there were clear signs of accumulation, and I think that certainly helped propel stocks higher this week. Nevertheless, you know, I really can't advocate chasing the indices at this point with such extreme prices and sentiment readings. Instead, we're seeking candidates with solid fundamentals and trends poised for breakouts in the coming weeks. And, you know, the Dow remains on target for our 18,000-plus forecast first shared with our subscribers about 2 years ago. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with Robert Kiyosaki and Robert Ian. We'd like for you to stay with us right here at GoldSeek. Okay, it's time for a listener's Q&A, opening up the phone lines.
Hi, Chris. John from Downers Grove again. You know, I've been having a hard time reconciling information coming out on GoldSeek Radio and from people like Peru Saxena and Jim Poplava over at Financial Sense Online. They're telling us that the economy is growing, that real estate has recovered, that we're on the upward swing. But here I read an article on by none other than Ben Lubsdorf at the Wall Street Journal, and we find that the economy contracted by 2% in the first quarter. Okay, now, I don't think that we're living on different planets, are we? Or are we? Peru Saxena maintains that the figures don't mean anything in reality. All that matters is perception. Well, perception may hold sway for a short period of time or maybe even a long period of time. But I think you know that there is no such thing as a perpetual motion machine, and this thing is going to blow up, despite what Mr. Poplava and you and Peru say, okay? And there's plenty of other people on Bubble Vision telling us that everything's okay. Things aren't okay. Why don't you visit Stockman's Contra Corner blog and get him on your show to point out why this thing's going to blow up, probably sooner rather than later. But you know what? Predicting the end of a bubble is extremely hazardous business. They could keep this thing going for a while. I admit that. But I really can't figure out why you and Saxena and Jim Poplava keep telling us everything's okay. Maybe the stock market is going to have a parabolic spike, and then it'll blow. But things are not okay, and you know it. The economy is not growing. That's a lie, and you know it. So why are you spreading this disinformation?
Well, this is a first on GoldSeek.com radio. Six calls from one listener. So we'll have to split up John from Illinois' questions between our other callers. He's concerned that I and several economic pundits that he listens to are intentionally disseminating false information regarding the robustness of our economy. Hi, John. You know, I was not aware that I've been putting such a positive spin on the state of economic affairs. You know, on the contrary, I'm typically accosted for my negative outlook. In particular, the massive 47 million folks that we have here in our fine country who find themselves on food stamp debit cards. $4 trillion Fed balance sheet, declining standard of living, and our dollar debasement. Now, have you read my wealth building strategies? It's about a 250-page litany of what's wrong with our nation. As for FSN, you know, after they began charging to listen to the show, I've not listened since, but you must admit that they've been right on track for several years, as has my Alpha Stocks newsletter, which continues to be long equities for, well, about 3 years, actually over 3 years now. After all, that's where the trend has directed the smart money. You know, why argue with the trend? So, frankly, John, you might be preaching to the church organist here. I agree that it is only a matter of time before Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and FHA implode, causing overpriced McMansions to come careening down in price. And this will likely force the Fed to buy up trillions of dollars of toxic mortgage-backed securities, or just let the ship go down. The powers that be and the governors will likely just burn the dollar to keep the economic house of cards from collapsing. And of course, that's highly inflationary and positive for the precious metals.
Chris, John from Downers Grove again. Just one little comment. I just got done listening to Saturday's webcast. We had James Turk and the fellow from Nenner Research. The jobs creation that came out, the supposed 217,000 jobs, I suggest that you read Paul Craig Roberts' latest on that called More Phantom Jobs Created. Agree with John Williams, Paul Craig Roberts, or not. We all know the government's been lying in their statistics for years. That's not debated any longer. Why is it that Gold Seek Radio seems to be swallowing these lies without getting into the details, like you guys usually used to do, at least? Let's get serious here. There weren't 217,000 jobs created. There were zero jobs. We have 23% unemployment. Everything that comes out of the BLS and any government entity, you can guarantee that is outright lies or they're spinning it. And until you can produce hard evidence otherwise, I would discount everything that comes out of the government. And you guys seem to be talking out of both sides of your mouth lately. You're sounding more and more like Jim Poblava. Yeah, maybe the stock market is going to go to 20,000 or 25,000, like Martin Armstrong says. But if it does that, it will be a blow-off spike. And that's it. All over. Fini. Bye-bye.
Up next, it's John. You know, John, the Bureau of Labor Statistics does continue to adjust hedonically the way that you pointed out there, their computation of the employment figures, and I think you're right. If the former U6 figure were used instead of the current U3 number, the actual unemployment rate would clearly be over 20%. And I would point out, though, that I calculate the U6, well, by Excel spreadsheet, and have custom charts uploaded into the Alpha Stocks newsletter archives for my subscribers to keep an eye on the inflation, the true inflation numbers, and the true unemployment figures. I do get slightly different results on employment and inflation. Again, I'd note that it's the food stamp debit cards, credit cards, and easy loans, all that money sloshing around the world, plus entitlements, that I think keeps the music playing. But as with any Ponzi scheme, eventually the music stops when the small majority of productive business people simply cannot carry the burden any longer. Eventually, our lenders will demand repayment and the dollar will implode. I expect that this will occur like a thief in the night, and maybe only secret groups like the Bilderbergers will know the precise moment when it will come to pass. We're on the same team, though, John, you know, just standing on slightly different positions on the playing field.
Chris, this is George. I find it depressing that the Fed can keep pinning down select markets such as oil, gold, and silver while tapering $10 billion a month. The 10-year yields have fallen back to 2.5%. Every effort is being made to talk the dollar up and the euro down, but the dollar is unable to rally above 80. It is rumored that the Fed is funding money to Belgium to buy treasuries. I don't know if that's true, but I do know that personal income is distorted by using an imaginary rate of inflation. If incomes go up by 2% and the reported inflation rate is 1%, then all looks well. But this looks altogether different if the inflation rate is 9%, which is closer to the mark. So I keep dollar cost averaging into precious metals, buying at support levels. I just don't see how the government officials, the propagandists in mainstream media, and regulatory agencies can sustain this illusionary picture of an improving economy. We've gone through 3 QEs and 2 operation twists that have only created stagflation instead of growth. Could you please comment on these issues? Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Next up, longtime listener George from my adopted state of North Carolina is concerned that the government is manipulating the precious metals, energy, and commodities markets while tapering monthly mortgage-backed purchases. Well, hello, George. Long time, no call. I'd like to begin with your comments regarding QE and the lack of growth. You know, you're right. The Fed has gone from pushing on a string to pushing on a sticky, wet noodle. On the one hand, they take hawkish stances and claim to be tapering, but on the other, the new Fed chair publicly announced plans to hold rates low for about another year. Here's a twist. The ECB has taken the unprecedented step of lowering lending rates into negative territory. I find it likely that the ECB and the Fed are in collusion here, with officials insisting that the ECB follow in their post-credit crisis footsteps. In fact, the Fed could be forced to capitulate and take rates even lower in order to offset the unexpectedly sluggish economic numbers. The key walkaway point, the Keynesian economic miracle was an illusion. We must follow the example of our predecessors just a few generations ago who scrimped, saved, were frugal, family-oriented, hardworking, and strive for solid educations, hoping that maybe not they, but future progeny would benefit. Thanks, George.
Chris, John from Downers Grove, Illinois again. I'd like you to address in your next broadcast or the next time you have some call-in time. You seem to be quite bullish on the stock market. And I'm trying to figure out how it is that you're so bullish. We have record spread between bulls and bears. We've surged into very dangerous territory. Of course, that means we're ripe for a fall. High readings show the bulls at 62.2%, up from 58.3% just a week ago. We have margin debt rolling over and heading south. We have corporations that are not reporting good earnings and yet borrowing money hand over fist to buy back their stocks. We have an economy that's actually shrinking, not growing. Any data that comes out of BLS is suspect, as you well know. It's all jury-rigged and manipulated and massaged. So given these facts and the fact that some monumental persons like Richard Russell, David Stockman, quite a few others are saying danger ahead. So how do you square this stuff? Please enlighten us. Why do you think there's more upside in this market? Oh, yeah, maybe we might go to 20,000 in a parabolic spike, but let's get real. All right, that's it. Thanks for the show. It's usually great, but you've been sounding more and more like Jim Poplava lately.
John, let me start with the fact that corporate buybacks are statistically very bearish. I think you're right. In general, it typifies the end of a bull market. There's considerable statistical evidence. In fact, one of the worst signs, I would never consider buying a stock knowingly that had recently completed a stock buyback. However, these were the same cries that we heard from the bears, you know, in the late 1990s. Do you really want to miss the next 1997 to 1999 bull run? But in the final analysis, markets can remain irrational much longer than shorts, well, can keep from getting squeezed or getting margin calls. When a market enters rally mode and there have not been any true signs of exhaustion, I advocate remaining with the trend. One of my top guests, someone whom I have great respect, was publicly humiliated last year with bearish calls and advertisements calling for, you know, sub 4,000 Dow just before one of the greatest and most spectacular moves in nearly 15 years. And that's the way these markets are. They really get the best of us from time to time. I've made calls that didn't come to pass as well. But, you know, in the Alpha Stocks newsletter, where I posted hundreds of stock picks, many of which have outperformed the market, we have stuck with the trend. You know, and it's not that I'm sharper than my guests, not even close. It's, you know, I don't think it takes a rocket science degree to know that when the tide is rising, all boats move higher without exception. So don't fight the tide and don't fight the trend.
John from Downers Grove again. Another comment. I don't know what Kool-Aid you guys are drinking over there now at Goldseek, but we're not having solid economic growth whatsoever. The official statistics put it at, what was it, 0.1% in the first quarter of 2014. Every single metric that we see, the economy is either treading water or sinking. We are in, what is it, month 66 of this bull market cycle within a secular bear market. Cyclically bull within a secular bear. All the major pundits, Richard Russell, you go right down the list saying, get out of the market,
stand aside. Something's going to give. Margin debt is collapsing. That's a sure sign the market's about to roll over. How much more upside potential could there possibly be at this juncture? Nobody can predict how these bubbles are going to burst, obviously, but, you know, late in the summer or early in the fall at the latest.
You know, John, I think we do have a difference of opinion. When you talk about a bear market, I think it's important to remember that at least from a nominal perspective, the Dow and the S&P are both at or near all-time record highs. That is to say that the highest highs in recorded history going back, you know, 150 years for the Dow. Now, these indexes regularly have been recording all-time records for months in a row. I'd suggest that you consider this underreported fact. If conditions are as bad as people seem to think domestically, you still have to ask, where are the massive money flows coming from that are propping up the markets? You know, if you think the Fed can do it on their own, I would suggest think again. You need to think globally. You see, the EU is actually much larger than the US, with over 500 million people. That's half a billion folks. Now that rates are in negative territory, businesses and individual investors, not to mention the deep pockets of pension funds in Europe, and particularly in Japan, the home of $3 billion worth of retirement funds, have shifted to, I think, the only game left in town, that's the U.S. stock market. Now, this is the missing piece of the puzzle, don't you think, that many people in the industry have just failed to accept? Let's take a look at the bank runs occurring in Bulgaria, the currency collapse in South America. You know, it's been nearly 15 years since the last inflationary crisis of any note occurred there. Where do you think much of those funds are escaping economic crisis? Well, if you guessed the safe haven of U.S. stocks and bonds, I think you're right. This is why investors must always adhere to the prevailing price bias and let go of ego. So, to paraphrase a favorite advertisement, stay with the trend, my friend.
John from Downers Grove calling again. I heard your opening spiel on Saturday's broadcast. Some words jumped out at me, and it's solid economic growth based on whose figures. I don't think the first quarter's gross domestic product figure was very good. Do you? I think it came in at 1% or less, which is a disaster by anyone's metric. So I don't know where you're getting these numbers from. Is from the Labor Department or where? Blog quite a bit lately, and this economy is beginning to implode. There's no growth. The only way they can keep the stock market propped up is have the Fed manipulating it and all the buybacks, like Hewlett-Packard posting losses for 12 quarters in a row. They fire people and use the saved money to buy back their stock. That's how you prop up a stock market. Thought I'd throw my 2 cents in there.
And John again. Well, for equities investors, things aren't much better than 5 years ago, and the precious metals are starting to show signs of life. I think it's key to remember that the economic figures have different impacts on the economy. For example, much weight is placed on the unemployment number, but did you know that employment is not really a leading or even coincidental indicator, but a lagging indicator? That just means that there's little faith in employment figures as a forecasting tool. As for the abysmal GDP figure, I did point out that it was a bad sign for the economy, but you have not once mentioned, I think, the consumer confidence figure, which remains very solid. Over two-thirds of the U.S. GDP is comprised of consumer spending. So despite the pothole in the road in economic output, I think increased employment figures combined with a sanguine consumer means increased sales and, in turn, increased corporate revenues, profits, and higher stock prices.
John here from Downers Grove, Illinois, a longtime listener, love the show, listen every week. I know the stock market appears to be in a very bullish stance right now. I think you're of that opinion, that we got some ways to go here. But I'd like you to comment on something I read on, there was a contributor there, Wolf Richter of the Testosterone Pit. And he had a chart there showing margin debt on the NYSE, source to the New York Stock Exchange. And just prior to each collapse of the stock market bubble in 2000 and 2008, margin debt peaked and then turned down, never to turn up again. And the rest is history. Everything collapsed within 2 to 3 months. Margin debt, according to this chart, has peaked already in February 2014. That, of course, is not to say that it could make another run for the top, and it's not to say that the stock market could not have a parabolic spike in the coming
weeks or months. But what is your opinion of this usually excellent indicator that we have reached the top and it's all downhill from here? Any insights would be appreciated. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Hi, John. You know, here's my take. I have found that market indicators, particularly sentiment-oriented, are of some dubious value, at least on their own, independently. That is, unless they're combined and quantified via either, you know, log or square root in similar fashion as we would compute the standard deviation. For example, my favorite market indicator is actually a composite of seven excellent indicators. It did register an extreme overbought reading recently, and that tells me that we'll probably see some discounts in the weeks ahead. Nevertheless, the price of the trend remains up, and the ultimate determinant of markets remains the price. And most seasoned professionals know that markets can defy gravity for unexpectedly lengthy periods. That wraps up this week's caller Q&A, and we'd like for you to call in our toll-free Q&A hotline. You can do so 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You will get priority over email messages. We just simply can't get to them all. But if you give us a call, we'd like to field your question. Toll free, 1-800-507-6531. Please jot this down on a Post-it pad, or you can plug it right into your cell phone or your home phone. 507-6531, toll free within the contiguous United States, but you might want to check and make sure that it also is in your area. We'd like to hear your call. You can call in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, no expense to you. Tell us what you think, what's keeping you up at night with regard to the markets, maybe investing, buying a house, finance in general. 1-800-507-6531. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio. We want you to stay with us here. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you very much.
Why don't we start off today with your views on gold and silver? So far, it's a pretty good year for the metals.
I don't buy gold and silver necessarily for gold and silver. I buy gold and silver when I see what our government is doing. And the government is printing money, quantitative easing, and it's propping up the stock market. So a lot of the printed money goes into the stock market. Now, knowing that, and also to suppress the price of gold and silver. So knowing that, I buy gold and silver, not because it's going up or down on prices, simply because I know the end is near.
And I wonder if you might tell us some more about your latest book. You have quite a few in your repertoire.
I think the school system is completely, at this point, obsolete. More and more, like I was looking, reading the New York Times this Sunday, and the big fight is not so much the economy right now, it is the crumbling education system. And one of the reasons the education system is crumbling is, number one, is the teachers' unions. Our kids are not being brought up to date, and they're not viable in today's society. That's why student unemployment is so high. So I wrote why A students work for C students, and the reason for that is, what good is it if you're an A student? You know, you don't make any more money necessarily. I mean, you may become a doctor or a lawyer. But in the real world, you know, my banker has never asked me for my report card. All my banker asked me for is my financial statement. And so that's why ever since I started writing back in the 90s, was that we have to have financial education in school because we're going broke. I mean, our country is going down because most of our leaders have no financial education. I'm not Republican or Democrat, but they become rich when they become president. And you see, when you look at the classical battle between Republicans and Democrats, it's the money people versus those that don't have any money. It's just a horrible situation. Our kids pay the price. So that's why I wrote why A students work for C students and B students work for the government. A stands for academics. You know, they have good in academics. B students are bureaucrats to become public servants or executives for big companies. And the C students are the capitalists. And what we need in our society is not more A students, academics. We don't need any more bureaucrats. But we do need more capitalists who can provide jobs. So that's why A students work for C students and B students work for government.
You talk about folks born with a silver spoon in their mouths, and I think it's difficult for them to relate to what the typical bourgeois, middle-class person out here goes through day to day, the grind, just barely making ends meet, government taking more taxes, and inflation eating up everything else. Why don't you tell folks your secret recipe, as much of it as you care to today?
I wrote my book, Rich Dad and Poor Dad, because it's a true story. My rich dad was my best friend's father, and he was a man who started with nothing also, but he was an entrepreneur. And my poor dad was an A student, an academic, so it was really the contrast between a capitalist, my rich dad, and an A student, my poor dad, an academic, that I realized that there was something missing in school. And so that's why at the age of 9, I started studying with my rich dad. And I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, it's all in that story. I had to work for him for free because he said, if I pay you, you think like an employee. And he started really early with me. He started teaching me about money, just playing Monopoly. You know, 4 greenhouses, 1 red hotel. And today I own 4,000 houses and a red hotel. Yeah, and I use debt financing. I don't use my money. You know, as Rich Dad often said, only lazy people use their own money. So I use my bank's money.
I know that you've owned wells in the past, and it's certainly been one of the highlights of the commodities sector. It's well over $100 a barrel for some time, and it looks like after many years of consolidation, we might actually make an attempt on that previous $147 a barrel number that we posted way back in 2008, 2009. Any comments?
Yeah, well, I don't really track the price of oil because I do have over 400 oil wells. I also do not invest in oil stocks, like I don't invest in Exxon or Mobil or Chevron. And the reason I invest in oil is the same reason I invest in real estate, is because of taxes. Now, when I put $100,000 into the stock market, let's say I buy Exxon, I don't get any tax breaks. But I put $100,000 into an oil well as a partner with the entrepreneur, then I get 30% tax break. So I get $30,000 back. That's a 30% ROI. Now, I'm not recommending people do it, but I've been in oil since 1968, 69, 67, really, and I understand oil. So because, you know, the rich get richer because they get tax incentives. And so when I invest in oil, I put $100,000 in, I pay $30,000 less in taxes. Yeah, that's a nice return. Also, let's say I make $1,000 a month from my oil production, I only pay taxes on 85% of it. Now, if I invest in stocks, you know, notice the Obamacare law, I'll pay taxes, higher taxes, on any dividend and any capital gain. So why would I invest in stocks? So again, it's oil and real estate are basically tax plays for me.
Switch back to the precious metals mining sector. It's really struggled for several years here. Many folks are starting to take a second look at gold and silver stocks because of the way they've been beaten down. Do you see a resurgence or maybe some opportunity here on the horizon for the mining sector?
The reason gold and silver, from some aspect, I said, is not really to make money. It's an insurance policy against, I don't trust my government. I don't know how many times I got to say you. You're trying to make money on it. I buy gold and silver simply because I'd rather do gold and silver than save money, because every time they print QE, quantitative easing, the value of your money goes down. So gold and silver has been around for 5,000 years. I don't think the dollar is going to be around another 200 years or 100 years at all. It's going to be gone. So I don't save dollars, I save gold and silver. The other thing, that's the reason gold and silver is suppressed in price, is because the Federal Reserve doesn't want us to own it. And the reason I know they don't want to own it is where they give me a tax incentive to buy oil production, they punish me for owning gold and silver with a 30% tax. So I have a 30% capital gains if I sell my gold and silver. So I don't sell it. I just hide it in a vault in a secret place.
Do you worry at all about capital controls? You know, some people are concerned that the government continues to kind of ratchet down on every area of our savings and transferring funds internationally. Are you concerned at all that, you know, people might wake up and notice that they've had a Cypriot-style or MF Global-style haircut in their portfolios?
It's already happened through Obamacare. Every time you look at the name of the government, you know, law, Affordable Health Care Act, what that means is not going to be affordable.
That's what it means. You know, it's not affordable. It's really a tax act. What Obamacare does is tax interest, it tax capital gains, and it tax dividends. You know, and so anybody who is in the stock market or the bond market is now paying higher taxes.
But how can you punish the productive component of society? In what world does that make any sense?
Well, it doesn't make sense for the poor and middle class, but it makes sense to the rich. And that's why I wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Lesson number one in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the rich don't work for money. So when Obama says he's going to tax the rich, he doesn't tax the rich. He taxes high-income people, high-net-worth people, who have high-paying jobs and invest in the stock market. You know, back in 1996, I believe, there was a book called The Millionaire Next Door, written by a guy named Stanley. It was a good book for its time, but today The Millionaire Next Door is the foreclosure next door. And, you know, the whole supposition on The Millionaire Next Door was how wonderful America is. You know, you buy a house for $100,000 and 10 years later it's worth $1 million. You know, you have a $100,000 stock retirement portfolio is now worth $1 million. And then 2007, the subprime market hit and The Millionaire Next Door got hammered. I don't know when people are going to wake up and smell the coffee, but they're being set up by our own government. You know, that's why they don't tax the rich. They tax doctors, lawyers, CEOs, and guys who play the stock market. Now, they also punish those who hold gold and silver, but like I said, I'm not playing gold and silver. It's not my game. I would rather hold gold and silver than hold dollars. So it's a different strategy.
So what advice would you give then to the typical listener today, just waking up to the prospects of much higher inflation, stagnation in the economy like we saw in the 70s?
I wouldn't listen to a financial planner or a stockbroker because they don't really, if you're buying those gold and silver ETFs, you're playing right into their hands. I don't touch that stuff. I'm just saying you better figure out who you are, what game you want to play. My wife plays golf. I don't play golf. You know what I mean? You got to figure the game. So I love gold and silver. I've owned gold and silver mine. Just five things you got to be holding right now. Number one is gold and silver. Two is grub, food. You got to have food. So I've stored food. Three is ground or real estate. Like, you don't want to own property in Detroit. You know, you want real estate with food and water on it that's safe, not next to criminals. Fewer where it's possible. And then you have to have gasoline, which is oil and gas, and five is a gun. We're not in a safe position, and they want you to think we're safe, but we've never been in a more precarious position in U.S. history. So that's why I love my gold and silver, and I have my own guy who loads my bullets, because that's what they're after, is the bullets next. I am a former Marine helicopter gunship pilot. I was deadly with an M60 and rockets, and terrible with a pistol. Well, Forbes magazine, you know, way back when, I think in 86, said buying machine guns is one of the best investments you can make because they don't let you make them anymore. I hate to say it, but nothing has changed for me. You know, education, which is Rich Dad, is going to be the biggest industry of all because people finally will wake up and they'll find there's no financial education in school. That's not an accident. And number two is, I just said to you, Obamacare is... it's really a tax act, and when they basically hammered dividends, interest, and capital gains, they're coming after the millionaires next door, the guys with high-paying jobs and big stock portfolios. I mean, they have to do something. I mean, you know, I'm not a conspiracy type of guy necessarily, but I don't doubt there's one going on. You know, I'm just going, what is it? And I read years and years ago, that one of the things was the problem with Americans is we had the entrepreneurial spirit, and they couldn't break us. So the way they could break us, the ultra-rich, was ultimately to get us dependent upon the government for life support. And that started with, you know, Social Security in 1933, I believe. And today the American spirit, American dream, has been replaced by the entitlement mentality. So I do think there's something to breaking the spirit, and I think the American spirit is broken, I'm afraid. I hate to say that. And that's why if you have guys who can promise you to give you more food stamps or whatever, and everybody's happy.
There's just no free lunch, is there? There's always some string attached.
There's a lot of people who expect one. That's the problem.
Exactly. And, you know, speaking of free lunches, food stamps near a record high, just as they're cutting back on the programs, a lot of people have found themselves in really precarious situations. But now, well, who's going to feed them? People just can't afford to feed their families.
Yeah, food is a very big issue, you know. I get a little irritable around dinner. Now, one thing good about the Marine Corps is they really taught us how, you know, close to animals we are. And in Florida, during flight school, they used to throw us into the swamps and have us survive for 4 or 5 days without food. Within like 2 days, we were primal. I mean, I would have chewed off my best friend's leg at that point. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think we're 2 days away from animals. And that's why, you know, one of the G's, grub, you should have food in your house.
Think back to about 6 to 8 months ago when the food stamp cards were cut off all around the country and people emptied the grocery store shelves within hours. We are such a just-in-time society that as soon as we get cut off, there's going to be pandemonium within hours, not days anymore.
I get really interested when all they go, well, we'll take all the guns away. I'm going, oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, tell us how that's worked out for other countries in the past.
Well, from what the studies I have, because I am a former Marine, every place where they don't have guns, people are very subservient. You know, because they're afraid of authority, the Gestapo, you know, government, police action. And then it is true, then the criminals have the guns, because I go down to Mexico quite a bit. And for a country that has no guns, there's a lot of guns. Oh, man, I was coming up from through the border, and there are lines and lines and lines and lines of armored vehicles of the Mexican army. They're ready for war. And for a population that's not allowed to have guns, who are they afraid of? Well, obviously the criminals. Well, when you ask me why I live in Phoenix, Arizona, is every citizen is allowed to carry a gun concealed. So why am I in Arizona? Because it's a very peaceful town. You don't find me, you know, making high signs to other drivers because they're probably armed too. No, I don't. You know, we're much more polite because everybody's armed. Unfortunately, when that Gabby Giffords, that representative, got shot, there were several guys who were armed, but they were afraid to shoot because if they pull a gun out, the police would shoot them. So you got to think a lot when you carry a gun. Oh, yeah, I think. And I got to think very carefully about using it. But all you have to do is go to Mexico and see a society that doesn't allow citizens to own guns, and there's more guns everywhere. And that's, you know, on both sides, the military and the bad guys. I had a friend who was just shot there about 4 years ago. I don't know what people are thinking. Do we have utopian society? You know, I'd like to have one, but I don't think so. Well, when people ask me about guns, I just say I support the Second Amendment, which is true. No, you want to take guns away, then change the Second Amendment.
Well, you're not far from what's happening there at the Bundy Ranch in Nevada. Well, you may have heard that they're essentially having a showdown over the cattle rancher there in Nevada. The government wants to take all of his cattle away. They have a huge ranch simply because he's been allowing them to roam on public property. They say, hey, you owe us $1 million. And he says, my family's been doing this for 100, 200 years. What are you talking about? Feds coming from all over the country outside his jurisdiction at his ranch. Well, guess what? Militias suddenly swarm in support. Quite a showdown going on there. I wanted to ask you about REITs, you know, real estate investment trusts. They've been doing very well in recent years, and they tend to have fantastic, of course, dividend yields, as well as a lot of interesting tax-related qualities. Do you have any interest in the REITs?
Stocks, bonds, ETFs, mutual funds, savings are all paper. I'm a hard asset guy, you know, and I don't trust my government. I don't know about it. I hate to say that. I was an academy graduate, 6 years in the Marine Corps. Anybody calls me a traitor, then I'll shoot them. You know, I'm going, hey, come on, give me a break. It's freedom of speech here. So I just don't trust my government. I buy gold and silver. One last story is that, talk about investments. I have a friend, I mean, he's an attorney. I'll forgive him for that. But he had, I think, 10 million rounds of ammunition. And he bought them at 6 cents a unit. And then, unfortunately, after that shooting in Newtown or something like that, his rounds went to $1.20 a unit. But he says, I never made so much money in one day. Unfortunately, that's not the kind of way you want to make money. But I think that is a reflection of the insanity and instability within our society. And that's why I speak the way I speak. If you know, I was watching CNBC this morning, I said, oh, yeah, don't worry, it's fine, everything's okay. And I go, well, why is unemployment so high? Why is food stamps so high? Why is Social Security broke? Why is the national debt going through the roof? And why are we printing $1 trillion a day or whatever we're doing? So that's why I talk to you. I think gold and silver is a good start. You know, it takes a lot of intelligence to do real estate, a lot of study, a lot of education. But gold and silver, just trundle down to your local gold or silver dealer. Don't buy rare coins. Just buy, you know, silver maple leaves or silver Kruger, silver gold Krugerrands, and feel good about it.
What about silver? What about 90% silver coins?
You know, most people are not going to do what I do or probably what you do, is I'm in the market studying constantly. You know, I'm buying another hotel. That takes a lot of sophistication.
Really doesn't take a lot of gray matter to simply buy near spot some gold and silver. You're not negotiating over a collector's item on some rare coin from the 1920s. Just start building a stockpile of the precious metals.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch rare coins because that's what you call a loss leader. They say, oh, buy gold. You know, they see Pat Boone advertising buy gold and silver. But when you call up, they're going to sell you a St. Gaudens or whatever it is. Something you have no idea is true value, but that's where they make their money. They don't make their money with you buying gold and silver coins. I mean, spot prices. You know, if it's $20, they don't make, they're going to make, what, $2? So, but they, I understand they have to stay in business, and they're going to try and sell you a rare coin, and I understand that. But if you don't know what a rare coin is, don't buy it. You know, it's like, I don't buy diamonds because I can't tell a diamond from glass. Yeah, but, you know, the reason I love regular, like Krugerrands and maple leaves and eagle, is there's a daily market for it. It's called spot. And you know what it is that day. You don't have to go and guess and negotiate and wonder. It's worldwide.
Are you spreading your eggs around? Are you sending anything offshore, maybe to a Brinks vaults in Canada or Panama, Switzerland, anything like that?
No, I think one of the things that people do not realize, I mean, except for safety, America is one of the best tax havens in the world, but it's not in stocks and bonds and paper. It's in real estate and business. And so when you understand that, then it's a tax haven. Otherwise, are these people trying to dodge it and all this stuff? The reason I like real estate is two things, debt and taxes. I borrow, say it's $1 million property. I'll borrow $1 million, make my 10%, so I make $100,000, and I don't pay tax on it.
Well, you've told us in the past that whenever you go into a business deal, you ask, how is this person or how is this deal going to come back to bite me? When it comes to real estate, tell listeners how it can come back to bite them and things to watch out for.
Real estate is basically property management. You've got to know how to manage the property. I mean, so many people say, oh, I'm just going to manage it myself, man. I'll tell you a horror story. We all make mistakes. That's how you learn. But I bought this property and I was managing it myself and I was going to paint the thing. So I brought a painter in and the tenant says, hey, don't pay the painter. I'll paint it for you. Yeah. He said, I'll do it for less. I said, 3 weeks later, I go back in and he did paint it. He only painted it as high as he could reach. So he had this roller. Let's say he could reach 7 feet and the ceiling was 8. There was this 1 foot gap. So I had to hire a painter to come in and repaint it. So anyway, that's how we learn, you know, but the reason I love gold and silver, you don't have to have a tenant. So like I said, he's going after the millionaire next door, anybody with a high-paying job, and anybody who has stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. And that's why it is, and savings. But the point is here, I say it again and again and again, I'm not buying gold and silver as an investment. I buy gold and silver like I buy a gun. That's all. I hope I never have to use it. Well, I think one of the beauties of silver is you can still go and use it as money. And you know, gold's a little tougher because not too many people want to change, you know, 2,000. See, I see a U.S. silver dollar as a $20 bill. That's what I see it as. And I can just go to somebody and say, you want $40? I'll give you $2 silver dollars. Here's the spot price. So, okay. So it's still money. But if I use it as an investment where I pay the capital gains, I lose money.
And I think that's one of the reasons why the powers that be don't like silver, because they know that it facilitates under-the-table transactions, which kind of pulls them out of the equation, doesn't it?
Right. You and I know that the whole savings system was a rip off our money. You know, you put in $10, they lend out $100. It's called inflation. So the whole way you lose money is by you save money and you invest for the long term in the stock market and you have a job. Those are the three ways they rip you off. You have a job, you pay taxes. You save money, they just inflate it. and your 401k is the same as taxes. They take your money before you get paid. It's all set up against you. That's the way I look at it. Again, I'm a very patriotic individual. I just don't like what the government's doing.
Whole system is set up in order to extract the most blood from, you know, the typical individual and family.
Complete heist. Look, the only reason there is a monetary system is to steal our wealth. That's the only reason.
No, it's a scene right out of The Matrix. You know, I mean, we're all just a bunch of Neos walking around, and we don't know that we're being bled dry because we can't even see the system. It's behind the scenes.
So that's why I like gold and silver, not ETFs. I like the real stuff. And keep it in a place that nobody can trace it, find it. You know, and I'm not spending, I'm not investing. Well, that was that whole thing with the IRS, that woman, what was her name, Lois Lerner or something? They were banging on the Tea Party. I'm not a Tea Party guy, but they were banging on them. And then what does she do? She gets a bonus and a retirement. She takes the fifth. I mean, if that's not corrupt, give me a break here. If I take the fifth, then you know I'm the crook. I haven't taken any fifth. I'm telling you what I'm doing.
And I want you to tell folks a bit more about how they can find out about the Rich Dad services, any web pages, and what you're working on right now.
Just go to richdad.com. Is that I think the future of education is on your iPhone. So we're doing financial education over iPads, iPhones, and computers. Because I think the education system's corrupt. That's why there's no financial education in our schools.
Would you be recommending folks who are starting out to try to be entrepreneurs in the education arena? Is that going to be the place for, you know, future millionaires?
My prediction is education is going to be the biggest business of all.
Bigger than healthcare with the baby boomers retiring?
Well, bigger than that. Well, you see, everything is education, you know what I mean? The military's education, everything's education.
What about security on the horizon as people age and, you know, they need to protect their assets, their homes, their families?
More than you know. You know, there's a thing called Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the triangle. Is that when people feel threatened, the first thing that goes out the window is morality.
I mean, if you read back over the French revolutions and everything, that a very similar situation where the currency was devalued over a very long period of time, and then suddenly you notice huge graft and corruption all throughout the system. Everything that you just talked about was the result of the implosion of the currency because it was just deflated away.
They feel it when they go to the supermarket and they see prices going up and hear the government say there's no inflation. You know, when Obama came to office in, 2008, gasoline was $1.60, and now it's $3.60. And he has I'm not blaming him. He has the audacity to say there's no inflation. And the reason that is because Nixon passed that CPI law that inflation took out fuel and food. But they lied to us. Get educated.
But you know, there's another aspect of that because I've actually decomposed the CPI number myself following John Williams' formula. And what I found was the food and energy, you're right, it's important. But what folks have missed is what's really held inflation in check was the decline in housing prices, because that's a big factor in the composition of the CPI. So with housing prices way off their 2006, 2007 peaks, that's kind of given, I think, the government a carte blanche opportunity to pump up the money side of the equation. And now that housing prices are moving back up, I think they're losing some of that wiggle room.
That plus, you know, there's a currency war on right now. You know, Japan just dropped the value of their currency. So that ultimately will lead to higher inflation. But right now, Walmart shoppers kind of enjoy it because everybody's trying to bring up lower-priced goods. Bad situation.
You know, speaking of Japan, I don't know if you know this, they have $3 trillion in pension fund money sitting there, one of the largest pools of funds in the world. People are wondering whether or not that, which is highly bond, you know, an Abenomics-related bond market, as that even starts to trickle into the precious metals, it could send them sky high.
Yeah, it's only a matter of time. I mean, I agree with you that money is running all over the place right now. You know, what I feel sorry for is all the guys in bonds today. You know, and what they said was that when you're younger, you buy growth stocks. When you're older, you buy bonds. And then what happened was, you know, since I was in that CFP class, bonds have been in a bull market because the returns have gone down and down and down. Now, as we know, the pendulum will swing when bond prices or interest, you know, the dividend, what interest paid from bonds goes up, then bonds will collapse again. All my generation, the baby boomers, who are holding bonds right now, thinking bonds are safe.
Okay, last question as we wrap up here. Are you a marksman shot or not?
I'm a machine gunner. I really am. I'm not kidding you. I flew the Huey gunship, and we carried M60s.
It was at a 50 caliber?
30 cal, belt fed. You know, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 on them.
On a single helicopter, how is that possible?
6 machine guns and 36 rockets.
Who would be manning all of those machine guns?
Well, the 4 are fired by the pilot, and then 2 side guns by the gunners. So when we dove in, the pilot's hammering away with rockets and machine guns. And then when we pull out, I have to roll either left or right, and then the gunners cover my tail.
But what kept the unfriendly fire, what kept them from shooting at the rotors, at the sensitive areas of the helicopter?
Well, they shoot at you, but you have to keep, that's why you have so many machine guns and rockets. And that's why I'm saying the pull, when you're coming out of the dive, that's when you're either rolling left or right so your gunners can keep their heads down.
Chinook is a double-propellered, it's a very large, usually carries heavy equipment.
Yeah, it's an Army transport, and Marines flew the 46 a little smaller. But in Vietnam, I saw one of those rockets go right up the tail of a Jolly Green Giant, man. It was frightening.
And so we're talking about RPGs?
But in Vietnam, I actually saw what's called an SA-7, a heat seeker, go straight up the tail of a CH-50.
All right. Well, Robert Kiyosaki, we appreciate your time today, and we're going to put links up there to the Rich Dad websites.
Yeah, please go to it. See our latest technology, which is, you know, our games on mobile devices and our books through a thing called Clutch, which is a faster way of reading, a more interesting way of rating. So we are a financial education company. That's what we do.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
This is Robert Ian with ClunkerChange.com. I am recording this on the 4th of July, Independence Day in the United States. On this important day, which many equate with fireworks and outdoor festivals, I want to address a form of unspoken, mandated, compulsory participation in our political and financial system that is demanded and extracted unknowingly and almost invisibly from just about everyone. On a day when we are to celebrate freedom and independence, we have to ask ourselves, what drives freedom forward? Money? Yes. Real money, as in gold and silver, that is both a store of value and an end in itself with no counterparty risk. But what's the real source of that money? Your productive ability. Your ability to think. Your capacity to innovate and take action. Your future production. The unspoken message, the undefined innuendo, behind common answers to everyday political questions, reveals a sense of ownership, a sense of entitlement, and outright possession by those elected officials who supposedly serve you, that somehow they own, possess, and are entitled to expropriate the most important asset you possess, your future production. I was having a discussion this week with a good friend who said, if the government, instead of spending it all, had just put the money it collected from Social Security taxes away, perhaps into that mythical Social Security Trust Fund, recipients of Social Security benefits would not have to pay again in the form of taxes, health premiums, and other fees when they receive their, quote, benefits on money they supposedly paid in years prior. But we know the truth. The money that was paid in years prior was already spent that year, along with massive additional debt and unfunded debts that same year, which have grown every year since and haven't been repaid. Despite rhetoric and good intentions to the contrary, what we consider money, Federal Reserve notes, are actually instruments of debt. Debts have to grow every year to keep our financial system alive. Whether it's car loans, home loans, college loans, business loans, social entitlements, or wars, the debts created by these vehicles keep the system moving forward, and in the process, keep the people within the system enslaved. The average person works every day, spending time, effort, and energy to pay off debts created by the government's electronic printing press from decades ago. The debts created by the electronic printing press today won't be satisfied for decades or generations from now, if ever. Chaos will occur long before the debts are repaid, because the financial system will reset. When that happens, will you become more enslaved by debt or less? Will a new financial system, in whatever form it takes, provide you with more freedom and independence than you have now, or less? Will a new financial system still require you to bail out the government with your future production, the muscular force of your physical labor to work, to get up, to sweat, to spend long days and long nights of physical and mental labor that must be expended in real time to pay for the electronic creation of ones and zeros on the electronic printing press of today? It may not be too many 4th of Julys from now when we will have to actually answer these questions for real, because the debt is unsustainable, and the kind of freedom or expanded enslavement we ultimately live under will be the result of the kind of questions and planning and vision of the future each of us hold clearly in our mind right now for what we want the world to look like and become. Now is the time to argue for possibilities, not limitations. On this Independence Day, I want you to become very aware, very possessive, and very protective of the one asset that others are always trying to leverage and steal away from you in drips, drabs, and increments. Governments are trying to cost shift and tax it away, and anyone you allow will lay claim to it as if it belonged to them and try to make you feel guilty about it as they steal as much of it for themselves as they can. I'm talking about your future production. The essence of you. It's why you get up in the morning. It's why you work so hard. It's why you innovate. It's why you take risks. It's why you're alive. And frankly, It's why you should defend your freedom and your independence on all levels, and be prepared to do so when others take what isn't theirs. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter @ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.